Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the State House Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of April 9th, 2019. We're a month away from the end of the first year of the legislative session, which means it's crossover week. That's an insider way of saying if a bill hasn't passed out of its originating chamber, the House or the Senate, by the end of Wednesday, it's not likely to go anywhere this year without a supermajority vote. It's going to be in sort of a suspended animation. Wow. So controversial bills like the fetal heartbeat abortion bill likely won't leave the House this year, and others like medicinal marijuana will remain stuck in committee. And it's our 50th episode! Everyone look under your chairs because you got a trip to the podcast! That's right, I'm 50. We are 50 years old. We like to kick, Instagram, and tweet, and kick. We couldn't have reached our gold anniversary without you. Ooh, gold. I love gold! So throw us some gold stars on iTunes with a rating and a review. It's always nice to hear from you guys, especially when I hear from you on Twitter and Instagram. You tell me how great we are. Put it out there on iTunes, especially on our 50th birthday. 50. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of wondering why someone would drink the martini you left on the bar next to your phone when it isn't theirs. This is my true life story. If it's not yours, don't touch it. Don't even look at it. Or while you brush up on your Game of Thrones, hey, we know you're not going to read the book because you don't like to read that much. That's why you listen to us. Let us be your audiobook. And now for a brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Record scratch. Special announcement, the Lead is coming to Rock Hill Brewing Company on May 2nd. That's right, we're getting there before the Panthers do. So mark your calendars and plan to come see us at 6:30 p.m. at Rock Hill Brewing on May 2nd. We'll have that RSVP up shortly on our website. Number one, leading off our quorum call is the sad announcement of the passing of former U.S. Senator, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and State Representative Fritz Hollings on April 2nd at the age of 97. Hollings was a Southern Democratic Senator with a sharp tongue and wit and was one of the last of his breed. Next week, our podcast will be devoted to Hollings, so stay tuned for that. He will lay in repose in the State House on April 15th, and a service will be held at the Citadel's Summerall Chapel on April 16th. Stick with SCETV for remembrances of Hollings, live coverage of these events, and more on SCETV.org and on our YouTube page. The Lead's social media accounts will also feature videos, photos, and more over the following days. Number two, Tom Mulliken, a man who spent a significant chunk of his professional life fighting to prevent efforts to curb climate change, is now responsible for safeguarding South Carolina against the effects of global warming on the State Floodwater Commission. This, according to the Post and Courier. In the past, Mulliken says the debate over climate change has been, quote, hijacked by political conversation. Proposals from the new flooding commission include planting more vegetation on the shoreline, building a new man-made lake, and constructing an artificial reef along the entire length of South Carolina's 187-mile coast. Number three, the state newspaper reports that the South Carolina House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved a proposal for the state to help pay for expanded broadband internet access in poor counties. If the bill passes, providers could apply to the state for up to $2 million to expand broadband internet service in underserved areas, where at least 90% of households do not have access to fixed broadband at speeds faster than dial-up. And number four, as it turns out, worries of the trade war's effects on cargo going through the port of Charleston were overblown, this according to the Post and Courier. The port handled 214,123 containers in March, a record for the month and the second biggest total ever. The statistics also came as a surprise to Jim Newsom, who's the president and CEO of the State Ports Authority, who previously predicted that at least a 10% drop was expected in cargo volumes because Asian shippers were thought to have sent much of their goods ahead of schedule to beat tariffs threatened by President Donald Trump. Those never materialized. And again, I want to thank you all for helping us get to our 50th episode, but we're not going to stop at 50. We're not going to stop at 100. We're going to go all the way to Washington. Yarr! Oh, geez. Oh, God. Is that it? We're not gonna get a 51st now because we're going to be... Oh, I've seen this before. We just Howard Dean ourselves. Maybe you can just bury the lead with that good old Disturbed scream from EAT. Oh, ah! It's that magical time of the legislative session where the merry-go-round starts to speed up. By the end of this week, we'll have 1 month until the end of session, and Wednesday is crossover day, which means bills written in one chamber need to make it over to the other by the end of that day, or the likelihood of their survival, especially if they're controversial, is very small. Even if they do make it over, bills may be still stuck in committee. So what does this mean for you? Well, bills that we've discussed in the past, like medicinal marijuana, preventing cities from outlawing plastic bags, anything dealing with ethics or dark money is dead. Overhauling civil asset forfeiture is still being studied, and there may be some movement on a database dealing with asset forfeiture. And then other things are up in the air, like the status of the education reform bill, which is now in the Senate, Santee Cooper's fate, then the fetal heartbeat abortion bill in the House, which we'll discuss along with the $9.3 billion budget that the Senate Finance Committee passed out last week. To do that, we have the Associated Press's Jeffrey Collins and South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney. Welcome to you both.
Thanks. Hello, Gavin. Glad to be here. It's my third time, so I think I get to chair a subcommittee now, right?
Like you are chairman of crossover committee, which is not a real thing. But Jeffrey, speaking of your tenure, you've been covering the State House for how many years now?
I've been with the AP about 19 years, so most on and off, but yeah, about two decades. So.
Mm-hmm. And then crossover. I mean, tell us a little bit about the magic of crossover. What you can kind of say with what you've seen maybe in the past and what this year's one looks like. I mean, it doesn't seem like we're in this mad dash like we usually are at this time. Nothing seems really overtly controversial that people are trying to rush through. What's the sense right now where we are?
Well, the basics of crossover are that, you know, there's the deadline, and any bills that aren't passed by one chamber have to get two-thirds vote to be considered. So if you get passed by the House or the Senate, you're fine. You've got the last month of the session to hash things out. If you don't, if the bill has any controversy to it, it's hard to get two-thirds with anything that people are at least a bit upset about. One other thing to remember is this is the first of a two-year session. So when the session ends in May, early May, I think it's May 9th, mm-hmm. when the session ends, everything kind of freezes in amber. So if your bill's passed the Senate, when you start up in January 2020, it's in that same spot. So it's not quite as desperate a time this year because all your bills are going to stay alive. As far as this session goes, right now, you know, there's some things that are dead. I mean, medical marijuana is one of those things that can't get two-thirds. It hasn't passed either house. So in all likelihood, barring some bizarre, incredible shift, it's probably gone. Your gun bills are probably gone, too. And that's on either side of the thing, which has been the surprise this session. Both, Marlon Kempson's push to have the Charleston loophole closed where, you know, Dylan Roof was able to buy his gun because his background check wasn't complete. If they had completed his background check and there wasn't some confusion and jurisdictional problems, Dylan Roof may not get his gun. Well, they're trying to close that loophole so, you know, there'd be more time to do the checks or maybe even require the checks to be complete before, because right now, if it's an incomplete check, you get a gun. Mm-hmm. So that's gone. But on the other end of things like constitutional carry or open carry of weapons where you wouldn't need a concealed weapons permit to you know have a gun on you in South Carolina, that hasn't gone anywhere either this year.
Yeah, we haven't seen much about that like we have in years past.
Yeah, which is a little bit of a surprise. But this has been a much more sedate, calm session this year. There hasn't been a lot of fights. I mean, typically by now we've had two or three or four sessions that will go well into the evening mm-hmm. outside of the education bill in the House. And the House is one budget day where they just try, and it's because they try to cram everything into one day. That's the only time we've gone after dinner. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Senate has at all. So it's just been a very, it's interesting. I don't know if that's the Henry McMaster influence, everybody getting along or what, but I mean, it's been a very, what they've wanted to do, they've done, and they hadn't touched a lot of things that could have been really controversial or caused a lot of fighting.
You agree with that, Russ? I mean, outside of anything big. I mean, we don't have any VC. We don't have any, SCANA bills like we did last year. We don't have any roads bill. Education bill has been a big one, but that even has gone through and it's still kind of working through in the Senate.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. In the House, in its super efficiency these days, it's passed everything that it wanted or needed to pass this year. The budget, the Education Improvement Bill, a Santee Cooper joint resolution, and I guess you could put the solar bill in there as well, mm-hmm. passed 110 to nothing this year.
So, and Russ, we were talking a little bit earlier last week about, you know, some maybe inner politics, you know, workings between these committees. And, you know, sometimes one committee wants to push their versions of a bill, like a Senate committee wants to use their Senate bills, not necessarily the House bills, or vice versa. Is there any, have we detected any of that rivalry? I have some breakdowns of numbers if we really want to get into it. But is that a time-honored rivalry right there?
Well, it's a rivalry that I'm not just sure it's time-honored, but you seem to have heard a lot more about it, say, in the last 10 years or so. Former Senator Larry Martin, who's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, that was something that really was kind of a bee in his bonnet that he complained about every year. The House sitting on Senate bills, so therefore the Senate, we ought to sit on some House bills. But, you know, a good example is Senate Bill 1, mm-hmm. the first bill the Senate passed this year, dealing with their right to appoint and confirm the chair of the Santee Cooper Board. Senate 1 passed the Senate very quickly and really hadn't seen the light of day since it's been in the House. I assume it's rolling around in the Judiciary Committee somewhere, but so there's
possibly
there's
a little bargaining
of
chip waiting
absolutely.
To use that. And I'm going to break it down right now. If you want to compare bills between the two chambers and two big committees, I found out that 36 bills moved out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, 226 remain, and five of those bills were House bills. So the Senate did move out some House bills from their committee. Over in the House Judiciary Committee, 38 bills moved out, and no Senate bills moved out of the House Committee. So if you guys want to get some ammunition there, there's that. And then also Ways and Means, kind of similar. A lot of they actually did move House and Senate bills. So, Jeffrey, it's also interesting when we talk about two-thirds and having to get through some of these controversial bills. Neither party has two-thirds majority in the House or Senate. The Senate has 27 Republican lawmakers. The House has 78 Republican lawmakers. Those are just short of the two-thirds needed. So that means that, you know, compromise is still needed on some things if they want to get, you know, bigger things through.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, you're going to have to bring some Democrats in to get anything done. And that's assuming all the Republicans stay together. So that's a little more of a good proposition in the House. You can make that happen. In the Senate, though, I mean, there's a gamut of Republicans from the Senate. From one, there's a huge philosophical gap there from the most liberal of the senators to the most conservative senators. So it's a rare day when, you know, you have to have a pretty non-controversial issue before you can get all the Republican senators in South Carolina together. And chances are you're probably already having a couple of Democrats at least tagging along, too, because it's that kind of deal.
And then, Russ, I mean, in terms of, like, for example, you know, we're looking at, like, the solar bill, for example. Like, what's the likelihood of something like that, which has already gone over to another chamber, to make it through committee and actually get to, the floor of the Senate before sine die?
Well, the solar bill is in the Senate Judiciary Committee this week. I think most folks think that it's probably going to go through this year. That mm-hmm. seems to be the consensus. I think the Senate, though, is still trying to work through this kind of leadership change, a new leadership scenario in the Senate between a Senate president, Harvey Peeler, the chairman of the Finance Committee, former Senate President Pro Tem, Hugh Leatherman, and now the Republican Majority Leader, Senator Shane Massey, who also wears the hat as chair of the Rules Committee. It looks like they're still kind of going through a shakedown a little bit on exactly how the leadership in the Senate is going to work down the road. No big problems, no big upheavals, but that's kind of interesting to keep an eye on.
And when we talk about leadership, it's interesting to point out when we talk about this whole budget situation, too, which we're going to get into, is the difference in leadership in the House with the new House Ways and Means Chairman, Merle Smith, instead of Brian White. Do we know if that's contributed to any maybe difference in how this whole budget process has gone this year, Jeffrey? I mean, it seems like some people have been pointing to the fact that, hey, things are a lot different. Everyone seems to be on the same page. What have you been picking up?
Budget went through pretty smoothly, I mean, all things considered. And, I mean, you know, Merle Smith is one of those people. He's very much a Speaker Jay Lucas kind of disciple. I mean, Jay Lucas's philosophy is to try to be as inclusive as he can, to bring everybody he can in to at least listen to him, but then make decisive action and do it. I mean, you know, Jay Lucas isn't going to let things kind of fester. He's just going to move forward at what he thinks is best. Merle Smith is a lot like that, too. I mean, this entire budget debate was the budget that you saw come out of Ways and Means is the committee that writes the budget for the House is basically the budget that came out of the House. There was very little. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, there's been sent on over to the Senate. There was very little change made. So Merle Smith is one of those people that gets along with people, listens to people. I mean, I remember when, you know, Brian White was taken off of Ways and Means back in December, Gilda Cobb Hunter, the longest serving House member, Democrat from Orangeburg, you know, she mentioned that you got to remember the way you treat people on the way up, you're going to get treated that way on the way back down. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there were a lot of people that were like with Brian White that I think you rubbed some people the wrong way. So, and Merle Smith understands that. And I think he's trying to build those bridges too. And, you know, quite frankly, too, keep in mind, Merle Smith is, we talked about Hugh Leatherman and all the power he had in the Senate for a while before we had this change in leadership. Well, Merle Smith also runs ethics. Mm-hmm. And he's also on the Judicial Merit Screening Commission. I mean, you know, there's a lot of power there with Merle Smith. But the fact that he gets along so well with people, we don't hear about that. There's not that rumbling or complaint that I hear about with him and having that kind of power.
And Russ, looking at the budget, we had an episode on March 19th about the, you know, the $9 billion pot of gold. So if you want to know more about the budget, we're going to talk about it now, but listen to that episode again. But it appears like that's been the biggest news coming out of this session where, you know, we have teacher pay raises, you know, some money for rural infrastructure investment. Is that usual? Is that usually the case? Or like, is this just because they have so much more additional money, they had an extra $1 billion to spend that they could make some dreams come true in a sense?
Well, apparently so. It was interesting. Ways and Means Committee Chairman Merle Smith before the session said, well, you know, sometimes when you've got a lot of money to spend, that can be tougher to work through the budget than when you don't have quite enough. But it looks like it's kind of led the way for a pretty smooth sailing budget this year.
And that includes teacher pay raises from, what, 4 to 10%, and then state employee pay raises around 2%. They added a $600 bonus for state employees making less than $70,000 a year. Also a change in that lottery windfall rebates. The Senate's going to do a $50 rebate per tax return. So if you're a couple, enjoy your $25 apiece. The House had a $50 per taxpayer. And then they also added some more money to the local government fund, which is in the midst of probably being reformulated, and some money to the Criminal Justice Academy. So a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then $11 million increase to the base student cost. That's the Senate changes. So anything from that, Jeffrey, that we think is going to make it through back to the House or to the governor in the end?
To me, the very interesting part is there's a 15%, roughly 15% pay increase for solicitors, public defenders, and judges. Mm-hmm, and judges. I wonder if that's going to become a sticking point with teachers or some other people. I mean, you know, they can make a very logical argument. It's been a very long time since the folks in the judicial department got a raise. Other folks in state government have gotten raises since they did. There was a little scuffle there several years ago that, you know, the lawmakers were like, no. And so they were just angry, and so they didn't give them anything. But 15% is substantial, and if there's – I wonder when teachers start to hear about that, if they're going to be like, wait a second.
And I think the Senate reduced it a little bit, so I'm sure that's going to be some fun on the floor.
Yes.
And speaking of teachers, our good friend Mayon Schechter with the state newspaper had a Sunday story about just where education reform is going. Russ, we've been following this for a while too. It doesn't sound like – it's going to make it out of the Senate from what we've been hearing and reading.
It's beginning to sound that way. More and more senators are beginning to say this is going to have to be a two-year deal. That doesn't sit real well with the House, but at least they can say, hey, we passed it. You've got it. It's up to you now. It's in your court now to see to get it passed. But if you look back, big, big sea change legislation takes more than one session. Look at the road funding tax bill that took maybe close to 4 years. The Sandy Cooper situation is certainly something that's going to go require more than one session. So,
that's what we heard from senators too in the beginning of this year too. Hey, this could be a 2 year thing, which is I think why we thought, you know, them throwing some money in the budget for teacher pay raises would be a way to kind of mitigate any problems of people saying, hey, they're not doing anything because, hey, well, here's a pay raise, but bigger stuff is down the line.
Well, in the yin and yang of a two-year legislative session, we've had a very quiet 2019, but think about 2020 now, especially if education reform gets booted to it. So we'll have education reform. The House is itching to do tax reform. They aren't going to get it done this year. They put a bill out. I think last week they introduced a bill that basically just to kind of say, hey, let's have this out here for the last few weeks. It's not going to pass because of crossover and all that other stuff, but they'll have tax reform in 2020 they want to deal with. We're going to have excuse me for going back to the 90s here, we're going to have the mother of all special sessions if they decide to take bids on Santee Cooper. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? And they're going to put that just in one special session because they don't want that spilling out.
Yeah.
You've got that's going to loom at some point in the near future. There's a lot of stuff that's getting sent down the road that's going to make the end of this, you know, any special session in 19 and 2020 a big deal.
Mm. And 2020 is an election year.
Oh, exactly. Everybody's up, senators and House members.
I mean, It's just building. You know, we're just coasting through this year so we can have a big blowout next year. Is that how it's going to work? Speaking of Santee Cooper, Russ, is there any update maybe you can give us on the status of, you know, the back and forth between should we sell it, should we not, and evaluating these bids that are
well, as we mentioned, the House has passed a resolution establishing the process for the state to sell it. The Senate has passed, or excuse me, in committee, there are two different resolutions dealing with the similar matters. The one resolution by Senator Luke Rankin would make sure that the General Assembly has all the say on the matter. They're still in committee. Again, that's something that's probably going to get kicked down the road, as Jeffrey mentioned, to maybe even end up being addressed in a special session at some point.
Gotcha. And then we've been really going through a lot of stuff here, and I appreciate it. But the fetal heartbeat bill, which we saw go through House Judiciary last week, had a subcommittee hearing in the morning and then a long debate in the Judiciary Committee that evening. It outlaws abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected, which is around 5 to 7 weeks. Georgia just passed this in the legislature right before the end of their session, Mississippi, Kentucky. It doesn't sound like it's actually going to make it through the House from what I've been told from certain people in the House and leadership. But again, there are ways for, you know, parliamentary procedures for this to come up. So then, Jeffrey, if that's the case, then what was maybe the reasoning behind this last-minute push is what it seemed like? Is it to kind of get things set up again for more 2020 fireworks on this controversial bill?
Well, and I think to be specific on the abortion bill, I think part of it was, yes, you know, there are people in the House that wanted this thing to have a hearing. They wanted to get it out there. They wanted to get it passed. I think the political reality, they knew that it wasn't going to get past the Senate no matter what happened. So instead of clogging up critical debate time when they could pass some stuff out, they've put it in a position where it hasn't clogged up. Because when it hits the House floor, that's going to be a long debate. That thing's going to go well into the night, probably into another day. You know, I know that Representative Justin Bamberg still has, you know, about roughly 100 amendments he wants to put on. There's going to be some other people that come up with that. So they're going to have to go through a long process. You know, it's going to take a day or two to get through. Mm-hmm. So instead of letting it clog things earlier in the session when they actually could have gotten something accomplished, they're going to do it when they have some time and when it really won't keep bills that have a chance to pass from getting there. And in the Senate, the reason it's not going there is the Senate has shifted just a little bit back, and they couldn't pass anything last year.
No,
and it's just
tried.
Shifted a little bit, just tiny little bit back to a little more liberal side of things. So, you know, it's just the votes aren't there. They're just not going to be able to pass it, at least not until there's a shift in the Senate, maybe after the 2020 election.
Yeah, well, like we said, it's 27-19 in the Senate. Yeah. And that's pretty much what we're looking for. But do you guys have any predictions, any surprises? I asked for some surprises from some lawmakers, but no one wanted to tell me because maybe they don't know what's lurking in the distance. Do we expect anything big this week, or just maybe what's already on their calendars to kind of be worked through and worked on?
I'm interested to see what goes on with the Panthers bill in the Senate.
Being
our newest senator, well, not our second newest senator, Dwight Loftus, was sworn in. So our Dick Harpootlian, you know, said, hey, I want more information. But he wasn't even the only voice. I mean, Shane Massey, the Republican, you know, majority leader, also said, we'd like to hear a little more about it. I mean, that, you know.
And that's to give incentives for the Panthers to possibly relocate their headquarters and training facilities up to Rock Hill.
There's a lot of excited people. Like, the governor's very excited about it. The House leadership is very excited about it. But, I mean, the Senate's put the brakes on. I think it probably gets through. I mean, I think everybody's going to get their answers. But, you know, that was a little bit of a surprise. I kind of expected that to sail through. So we may hear a little bit about that. If not this week, then maybe after the budget gets done, because the Senate is taking its budget debate up a week from Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So the week leading into Easter, and the House is off that week. So,
well, like Jeffrey just mentioned, the House will be on spring break next week, and the Senate will spend that week debating the budget on the floor. That means as of the week of April 22nd, there will only be 9 legislative days left, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of the 3 remaining weeks until 5 p.m. on May 9th, the last day of session, which is called Sine Die. So like we said, there's a lot to happen before then. But before we get into thinking about next year's session, we got to make it through this year's session. And we will. So keep up with Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press and Russ McKinney with South Carolina Public Radio. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Starting off, former South Carolina Democratic Party Chairman Jamie Harrison, who was exploring a run against Senator Lindsey Graham, told supporters that he raised $231,000 in the 7 weeks since he formed his exploratory committee. Graham, who's an outspoken Trump ally and has survived challengers within his own party in the past, had $3.2 million in his war chest at the end of last year. Former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke is set to come back through the Palmetto State this weekend. More details will be announced for the Democratic presidential candidate, but I won't be in town next week, so I will not be putting together a trail bite from this visit. So stay tuned. We'll be putting details out on our Twitter when and where he'll be. And Republican Dwight Loftus was sworn in as the newest state senator last week after he defeated Democrat Tina Belge for the District 6 Greenville seat, 56% to 44%. Remember that state senator William Timmons vacated that seat when he won the 4th congressional district seat after Trey Gowdy announced he wasn't running again. The Senate is now fully stocked and has 27 Republicans and 19 Democrats. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back? This is a double dip episode. We got double dip of Russ today. Russ, what great trivia do you have for us today?
Back again. Well, we mentioned earlier in the podcast that Merle Smith, Sumter Representative Merle Smith, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the last chairman of the Ways and Means Committee from Sumter, this is not the question, by the way,
okay,
was
I'll
Representative Representative R.J. Acock. And I'm not sure you're aware that one of the South Carolina public radio stations, our Sumter affiliate, is WRJA, R.J. Acock. The powers to be at ETV and public radio for decades have been sucking up to the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. But anyway, so that brings us to call letters, interesting questions about call letters of radio and television stations. Yeah. WYFF Channel 4 up in Greenville, Your Friend 4. WSPA in Spartanburg, Channel 7 Radio, SPA Spartanburg. WCSC in Charleston, Charleston SC. There's WCAM in Camden. There's WDOG in Allendale, the big dog. But our question is WIS in Columbia, the dominant television station.
Oh, boy.
And for maybe a half a century, WIS Radio was perhaps the dominant radio station in the state. What does WIS, the call letters WIS, stand for?
Wow. Okay. This is fun.
Okay. A, wonderful independent state. B, wonderful indigo state. C, wonderful iodine state. D, weather information station.
I mean, I'm going to go with D. It sounds like the most logical one. I hope it's not that wonderful. Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful. What was, yeah.
Wonderful independent state. Wonderful indigo state. Wonderful iodine state. Weather information station. D.
Your weather information station. I'm going to go with that just because it makes more sense. But I could also see A being one, but I don't know anything about the other ones.
Mm-hmm. WIS stands for Wonderful Iodine State.
Oh, my gosh. What? You know, we think Iodine State?
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
In the 1920s and 1930s, South Carolina got all fired up about iodine and the importance of it for your diet. And because of the variety of the good vegetable crop in the state, the powers to be decided, you know, we can capitalize off this as
go.
A source of iodine. The 1930 South Carolina license plate actually said Iodine State. So the original owners of WIS in 1930 is when WIS Radio went on the air, decided they would try and capitalize on that, and they named the station WIS for Wonderful Iodine State.
Oh my gosh.
Now, all this went out the window in the early 40s when iodized salt came around. So, but that is how.
So I should stop investing in iodine right now. I've been hoarding iodine. Wow, that's really interesting. I did not know that was such a big thing. Look at that. They should. I'm wondering maybe they should rebrand it to that weather information station. Awesome, Russ. Well, thanks for that. Some great insight right there. And glad to see that I'm back down to zero now.
My pleasure.
The The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, Spotify, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at SCLEDEPOD, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLeadPod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send some your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to SCLEDE at SCETV.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Associated Press and South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on April 8th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Entourage is just Sex in the City for men.
I'm the turtle. Ground control to Major Tom Akuma Tata.